For those looking for a liberatory martial arts learning approach and curriculum, we've created Liberation Martial Arts. It doesn't just teach you martial arts, it's also an approach to learning movement skills. The whole point of our program is to remove the need for a coach, to liberate you from the need of top-down instruction and toxic gyms. If you have a coach and also have a gym, then you can apply our learning approach to improve your progress. Or maybe you also need a supplemental martial arts community as a counter to the commercial gym you go to. You can actually apply our learning approach to learn anything, and our practitioners are. They're applying it to all sorts of things, whether physical, mental, or even personal. It's just a radically different approach to everything. Sign up for Liberation Martial Arts at the Southpaw Pod Patreon, or support us by signing up for one of the other tiers, and help us support this project while also getting access to bonus content like early releases of SDS9 with transcripts. SDS9 Season 3 was recorded from the beginning of 2023 to early 2024 and was first published on Patreon. Now that we're done with the season, the entire season is being released all at once on the Southpaw public feed. Find Season 4 on the Southpaw Pod Patreon. This is Southpaw Deep Space Nine Season 3, where we analyze Deep Space Nine and Star Trek from a political and historical lens, episode by episode. I'm watching DS9 with fresh eyes, and Scott is our veteran Trek fan. We are discussing Season 3 of DS9, Episode 10, Fascination. Scott, can you tell us about this episode?
Fascination. Just made me think of like an 80s R&B song. So on Deep Space Nine, there's going to be a Bajoran Gratitude Festival. It is the third annual festival of its type on Deep Space Nine. The festival, though, is a long-time Bajoran festival. Ben sees Jake to see if he is excited, because usually he's excited for the festival, but Jake is sad. Marta, his girlfriend, who is an older woman, a Bajoran Dabo girl, has gotten accepted to a science school far away, and it appears they have broken up. Jake was going to give her a earring, which he is toying around with, and as we know, the earring is a very significant thing in Bajoran culture, and it's definitely more than a thing. There's a lot of importance to it. Ben tries to cheer him up, saying the festival will be nice, he's young. There's many people that he may meet, that life is a long journey, and love is not a monolith. We see Bashir and Miles, they're chilling. Miles is drinking cup after cup after cup of coffee. Miles hasn't seen Keiko and Molly in months. You know, because we know earlier in the season, Keiko went to, you know, do what she does. She's a botanist. She was unhappy with the work, and she is now doing an expedition. And Bashir and Miles have been playing racquetball together, and Bashir notes that he's no substitute, and Miles has been taking it out on the court. But Miles really doesn't want to mess up the trip. They only have a few days. He is anxious. We see Odo and Kira talk. Odo clearly has a skip in his step, and he wishes her a happy celebration and is like, I'm going to participate in the festival for the first time. Kira is happy. They're having a moment. But when Kira mentions that Vedic Baral, the Bajoran monk, spiritual leader, erstwhile politician, and Kira's sometimes love interest will be there, Odo is visibly shaken. Still, Kira really is thrilled that Odo is showing interest. Kira really likes Odo, whether she's aware that Odo may or may not be having feelings for her or not, unclear. Miles and Kira are at the bay waiting for their partners. Burrell and Kira have a warm meet-cute, but Molly and Keiko show up a little behind. Molly is sick, throwing up. Keiko is tired, and Lwaxana Troi, the Betazoid ambassador, and the Next Generation's Deanna Troi's mother, played beautifully by Michelle Barrett Roddenberry, wife of Gene Roddenberry, is on board too, who may as well be the reason why Molly is sick, as she gave her candy. Uh-oh. Odo tells security to watch Quark's bar viciously, way more than normal, because he's going to be up to some things. Ambassador Troi is very happy to see Odo. Her feelings for him are evidence. They had some flirty friendship previously on the episode Forsaken from season one. They do have a connection. For Odo, it's platonic, and she would like more than that. And she wants to be on Odo's shoulder. She wants to walk around with him, and she knows that what's going on with the Founders, and she wants to hear him talk. She wants him to open up. She wants to hang out with him and get to know him, and sort of is basically being like, you can trauma dump on me. It's all good. I'm into that sort of thing. Because the Betazoids are empathetic creatures, makes them for great counselors like Deanna Troi. And then we see Lwaxana getting a headache out of nowhere on the way to her quarters. Vedic Burrell and Kira are making out in Kira's place and talking about politics and Kai Winn, but Kira's unfocused and goes to the festival. Miles and Keiko finally get Molly to sleep. Keiko and Miles are very happy to see each other, but they're both anxious. And the writing here was clearly done by someone in a relationship, because the miscommunication and their worry about disappointing, and Keiko wanting Miles to be assertive about making a decision and being there, just felt really real. And so much indecision and the frustration of indecision when you're in a relationship and you're both tired and you're working hard. But they will go to the festival. As the festival begins, Kira does symbolic rituals and putting renewal scrolls into the fire. I'll explain that a little later. At the festival, people are getting headaches. All of a sudden, Jake is feeling better, but Jake brings Kira a treat and asks her advice about dating an older woman. Kira thinks he is talking about Marta, but Jake says he likes Kira. This is strange. He professes his love. And she's like, that's cute, but I don't think this is real. And then Burrell starts flirting hard with Dax and touches her leg. Then she gets the wince that Jake, Burrell, and Lwaxana have all been doing. Odo is jamming to Bajoran music. I wouldn't say he's exactly dancing, but he's doing something. But he's tight. And Lwaxana has him dance. And of course, he's hesitant to dance with her, but he goes to security with Lwaxana. He gets a call. A lot of people are having headaches, and Quark is dressed in Bajoran garb, selling his wares, selling his pens. Everyone is having a blast. Morn is talking about stuff. We never hear him talk, but talking about stuff to Dax. Everyone is jamming, having a great time, except Miles and Keiko, though they're starting to ease up. Keiko is very happy on her job, but it is grueling, and the job is likely to be extended for 2 to 3 months. So they will be apart for 7 more months, and then they have an argument. And Sabar, Keiko's work husband, has been talking to Keiko about how Miles would overreact, which in fact helps him to overreact. He starts acting very upset and says he wishes Keiko would just come back from the job, and she leaves Quark's, and he's like, fine, do that, do whatever you want, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, you know, a fight that goes wrong. Ben goes to talk to Jake about the Kira crush. Ben says it's just a crush, puppy love. But like Andre 3000 would say, Jake says it's full grown. He can't be swayed. At Quark's bar, Quark tries to cheer up Miles. Miles also has a headache. Quark recommends writing something for the Renewal Festival. So the festival, one, writes something that they want to move on from and puts it in the fire, the central fire of the festival, not dissimilar to many Earth traditions, and reminds me a little of Tashlik, where on Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year, we cast stale bread as a way to start anew. Quark starts ripping into Miles for letting Keiko leave and derides how many cultures in the Federation allow women to have agency and autonomy in relation to the Ferengi planet, where women aren't allowed to wear clothes, or there are many rules and apparently no divorce. The no divorce point reminds me of stats that people in ultra-religious sects will often use to talk quality of life and how everyone is actually happy. Kira goes to kiss Burrell, but he's sour to her. He's like calling her his friend. And she's like, friend? What the? She wants to have alone time. But Burrell says he must find Jadzia. Jadzia tells Ben something is off and Burrell is making her uncomfortable. But then Jadzia Dax makes a pass at Ben, which makes Ben uncomfortable for many reasons. He's known Dax, the symbiont that Jadzia is connected to, for two lifetimes as one of his closest friends was Curzon. So he's kissing his friend. And there's nothing wrong with friends kissing each other. That's a beautiful thing. But, you know, there's got to be consent and a vibe. Ben brings her to Bashir, who says there's no medical explanation. Kira is bummed. Jake is bummed. Miles goes back to his quarters. Molly says Keiko is in her room and sad. Miles apologizes for behavior. He takes full accountability. He's not defensive. He makes no excuses. And in fact, Miles says he's willing to resign to be with her and the family and wants to make the relationship work. Keiko says she needs time to think and she recommends that he goes to Cisco's party, the party for the festival. Kira, Lwaxana, Odo all talk and notice that people are acting strange. This sort of thing never happens on Deep Space Nine, right, Sam? Where people start acting strange? That never happens. Bashir now gets the headache too, and he and Kira start making out. Sucking face, as the kids would say. Lwaxana really wants Odo to talk about his feelings. Burrell is being creepy. Dax is being creepy. Jake is being creepy. Creepiness. Ben asks Odo to get Bashir, but that's when he walks in on Kira and Bashir making out. All is coming to a head at Cisco's party. Odo and Ben just can't explain it. At this point, Keiko shows up to the party in this red dress that Miles thinks Keiko looks particularly beautiful and radiant in. Keiko appreciates that Miles would resign, but doesn't want that. They kiss and they make up. And you know, Jadzia, but then out of nowhere, Burrell starts going for Jadzia too hard and starts trying to punch at Ben, so she knocks him out, and Lwaxana gets the headache again, and this seems to affect Quark, who is peddling pudding. So Quark tries to get sweet on Keiko, and Miles is obviously not having it, so that's when Bashir realizes that this may be because of Lwaxana. As I said earlier, Betazoids are empaths and emotional projectors, and their feelings are part of their communication. And she has Xanthi fever, which is a Betazoid malady that projects emotions on others. She thought she couldn't have had it because it affects a certain age range and ageism, you know? But she is healed. Everyone, therefore, is cured. And Lwaxana walks with Odo and says, look, it's up. You like Kira. And you got to figure that out. And Lwaxana kisses Odo and says that, you know, I'd be happy to be there for you if you don't want to be there for me. And then we find out that Miles wasn't affected. He just had a headache. He was just like attracted to his wife.
A note to our listeners. If you love the Southpaw Project, please support us and help us get paid for our labor by financially supporting us on Patreon. This will give you access to exclusive bonus content, like early releases of Southpaw Deep Space Nine, our fictional narrative podcast, Fighter's Brew, break-free versions of our shows without interruptions like you're hearing now, bonus articles, Fighter's Brew transcripts with extra content, Liberation Martial Arts Online, as well as our private chat group on Discord. You can also make one-time donations at Ko-Fi or show your solidarity by wearing our swag. You can find all pertinent links at southpawpod.com. So this was a meh episode, but I have a lot of things to unpack because I'm not saying it's not a meh episode, but they glossed over and bypassed a lot of serious shit.
Yes.
So right at the start of this episode, we get confirmation that Jake is indeed 16.
Yeah.
And Marta is in her 20s, I think. But age is never brought up as a problem during this whole episode and in the previous episodes, and not even when Jake wants to get with Kira. Which I wonder if there's a tacit implication that the age of consent in Star Trek is either non-existent or much younger than what we have now. Or it more speaks to 80s and 90s TV, where it was commonplace to see a high schooler dating someone in their 20s. I don't know, but really hard to ignore. I know people love the Sisko and Jake father-son relationship for its tenderness. But as a parent, parenthood isn't just about tenderness and vibes. It's also about guidance and parenting and protecting your child. And in this episode and in some previous episodes, Sisko goes with vibes rather than parenting. And for people who don't have kids, I'm sure they identify with Jake rather than Sisko. And yeah, I can see why, from the child's perspective, vibing is preferred. But parenting is about being tender, but firm. Autonomy and guidelines. Some things have to be made explicit. The thing about TV parenting is, regardless of how someone parents, the kid is going to be how the writers write them. There's no direct cause and effect. It's just based on whatever the writers decide. But the way people parent on TV doesn't necessarily mean the kid would turn out like that in real life. A parent telling a 16-year-old, yeah, I guess you dating a 20-something-year-old is chill, isn't going to be tender and wholesome in real life. Sisko is a good pal to Jake, but often a derelict parent. Sometimes being a good parent means doing the things adults without kids won't like or understand, but that's part of being a parent. It's not something you do because you're always appreciated or to get popular with young adults who don't have kids or who will never have kids. You do it because it needs to be done. Like today's modern parents think about emotional well-being and approach parenting from a care-informed approach. This is often called gentle parenting. Sisko is not gentle parenting. He's just gentle, to the point of allowing his kid to be abused by others. I think for people without kids, they think the primary concern for parents should be their kids liking them or something very short-term, like however they feel at that moment. For a parent's actions to be solely dictated by wanting their kids to like them is not a way to parent at all. So this is just something for adults without kids to think about. And speaking of doing some adult real talk from parenting, now let's talk about healthy relationships. The Keiko and Miles conversation at Quark's about her stay in Bajor getting extended. Yes, it makes for drama and shows us that people in relationships are human. It was interesting and raw and well acted and real. But it's not just about Miles' reaction being the problem. The whole thing was bad. Like Keiko not being transparent and preemptively assuming the worst about Miles and his reaction, even though she delayed telling him, and then bringing up someone else to talk shit to Miles.
Yeah, that was, again, I thought the writing was very honest, and again, written by someone, or just a really fantastic writer, or someone who's had conversations with their partner where people used forms of communication that might not have the desired effect. And I thought her bringing up the work, her work husband, the way she did, was a little manipulative.
Or the fact that she discussed this with a coworker rather than being transparent to Miles. Then, of course, we had Miles just going straight toxic. The whole thing was a lesson in how not to communicate in a relationship, and sort of related to the thing about parenting. Rather than communicate, this is what happens when you avoid dealing with a topic because you're afraid the other person won't like what you have to say. Maybe Jake will be more direct and communicative in his relationships, but it won't be because of what Cisco's shown thus far in their own relationship. And realistically, it might be more like, I don't know how to bring up bad news because we didn't bring up bad news in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said before in the previous episode, you don't have to agree with the characters to like the scene or like the episode. Now later, when Miles is like, I'm going to quit my job to make you happy and make his happiness Keiko's responsibility, that's another wrong move after another wrong move. Like, no one wants to be an adult in this episode. And actually, when Keiko says she needs time to think instead of falling all over herself because of his words, that was an adult move. That was a good bit of writing.
Well, because we also say in the social work profession and therapy profession, try not to make decisions when you're upset or when you're overly happy.
And that's real. Now, when we find out this was all because of Ambassador Troy, we learn this was all the subconscious feelings of the characters, which adds more tension because now we know certain characters have hidden feelings for other characters, which gives the writers more things to play with. What was nice was that Miles and Keiko had no latent feelings for anyone else.
I think, yeah. And I think if the show were written now and were like aware of ideas of like polycules and modern dating, there actually is something interesting of the idea of Dax and Ben exploring that. However, I don't think the show was equipped to deal with it.
There's a lot of things this show is not equipped to deal with, but they bring it up anyway, which is the thing about DS9, which is what makes DS9 DS9. They'll head into it and go for it, whether they know how to deal with it or not. They, as in the people who make the show.
Yes.
And then it's finally revealed Odo does have feelings for Kira, but Ambassador Troy doesn't need her empathic abilities to tell that, which basically means Odo can't completely hide his feelings for Kira. Scott, besides the laissez-faire attitude to grooming, what did you think of this episode?
Well, I was really upset about the laissez-faire approach to grooming. But I give it a 3 out of 5. Yeah, this has been the most meh episode of the season, which is still saying that this season is going great.
I probably liked this episode more than you did, because for me, it was kind of like seeing that these people are not all perfect, or in fact, aren't always great parents, aren't necessarily good people. And that's just how it is. And it's just kind of like watching them in these situations, and they'll have ugly, toxic fights. They'll say and be mean to each other, be manipulative. And also they have latent feelings for each other. These are all just kind of very human things. And so I enjoyed it in that way. It's kind of like, you really don't know somebody unless you see them in the right situations, right? You see them in one situation, and then let's say you move in together and then you see them in that situation, you're like, oh, they're not what I thought, right? Because who we are is all contextual. So this situation in this episode created a context, and a lot of it was about parenting and relationships, and we saw what they're like in those situations, and they're not the character sketches that people have in their minds. And maybe some people just bypass that and be like, no, they're still the same way as I thought they were. And it's like, recalibrate because we're being shown a lot. And the thing is, people don't have to be perfect. Not everybody has to be good for you to enjoy a show. And in real life, people don't have to be perfect and flawless or a hero for you to even like them. So I think there's a lot of like takeaways like that. The grooming aspect, I think, is just negligent writing. If Cisco was consistent to the way his character is written in other ways, then he wouldn't act like that in this situation. So I think it's just inconsistencies. It's like Black Panther, the first movie with Killmonger. With him just like randomly killing his girlfriend or like randomly killing people, like that's not consistent to the character of him that we know previously. It's like inconsistent, right? And so if you wrote a character who was consistent, he wouldn't have done those things. So there's some inconsistencies with the writing of some of these characters as far as moral framework as well.
Right. And also if you were consistent to the character of Killmonger as he was presented in this story, he wouldn't have done that either. It was done because you couldn't explicitly have people supporting Killmonger.
So they had to be inconsistent so that you would still boo Killmonger, right? Or at least children, right? Children boo him. And that's like the real takeaway of those movies is it doesn't matter what adults take away from it. Disney cares what the kids take away from it.
Right. And again, I've said this before on the show, but I'll say it all the time, you know, plot points like that, which happen on this show, happen in that, you know, which they call the women in refrigerators, which came from a comic book where a character found his girlfriend was in a refrigerator, using the death and violence of a woman to move on the plot. It's lazy.
So the writers too, they're human and they're flawed and they're contextual to their times and their upbringings, ultimately known as material conditions. So the only proper way to read anything is at least with somewhat of a Marxist materialist lens. Now, Scott, can you tell us about the next episode?
So past tense, I'm really excited for us to go here. Star Trek called what's going on like right now, 25 years ago.
So this is going to be a two-parter.
Oh, yeah.
And we might even have a surprise guest. So until then. Da-da-da-da. If you like this episode and like what we do, support us on Patreon. We also have the Liberation Martial Arts program if you want to train with us from wherever you are. It's both theory and practice and removes the need for an instructor. What you're learning is how to teach yourself. It's also an approach you can take with you from the gym into the world. Sponsors get a monthly training session with me, either in person or online. Supporting me not only helps me pay my bills, but it also helps me support my family. Find all our links, including Southpaw merch, at southpawpod.com.